Here Be Monsters is a show that invites you to explore fear and the unknown.
I saw her face change. I saw her see where I'd pulled my hair out.
Psychological warfare was always considered kind of an oddity, something done by freaks.
On the count of three, we're literally going to step out of our body. Step out.
You can find Here Be Monsters now at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Independent Producer Project of KCRW and kcrw.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of true stories and personal documentaries. This episode contains three stories of powerful women blasting into space, overcoming fear, tearing up the bike trails. And since right now we seem to be only months away from maybe the first woman being elected president of the United States, it seems like a good time to hear this one again. In this episode, Faster and Faster, three stories of women and speed. Barbara Morgan is a member of a very small club whose members have rocketed into space at unimaginable speeds. She was the backup candidate for NASA's Teacher in Space project, behind Krista McAuliffe, who died in the Challenger disaster in 1986. Barbara Morgan herself blasted off on a shuttle mission in 2007, and during a presentation to an audience a few years ago, she described what that feeling was like. From KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
15. Firing Jane armed. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, go for main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff of Space Shuttle Endeavour, expanding the International Space Station while creating a classroom in space.
Houston Endeavour, ready program.
Roger, roll, Endeavour.
Houston now controlling the flight of Endeavour. The Space Shuttle begins its journey back into orbit.
Endeavour rolling. When you climb in on the real launch day, there's all this and creaking and moaning and groaning going on. You feel like you're strapping into a live bird. It gives a whole new meaning to surround a sound. It's really cool. You know, a lot of people said, were you scared? And I can honestly tell you, no, you won't be scared. You are so ready to go. You and your crewmates have been studying and learning and practicing for years. You are really ready to go. And you're accelerating to 17,500 miles an hour. That's 5 miles a second. So think about that for a minute. Picture someplace 5 miles away from where you know, right? Like from school or whatever. And imagine starting like at school, going to that place 5 miles away and getting it there in 1 second. I mean, that's literally go, stop. So that's the speed you're traveling. And my colleagues told me, Barb, when you launch, it's going to feel like a 2-ton gorilla jumping up and down on your chest. But I definitely felt this huge push on my back. It didn't hurt, but it was like this big hand of God just pushing you as fast as you can go into space. So you have this huge push on your back. It almost felt like the orbiter could push through you and leave you behind. But it didn't. It carries you with it.
Pilot Charlie Hobaugh, flight engineer Rick Mastracchio and Tracy Caldwell. Dave Williams, Al Drew, and Barbara Morgan seated down on the mid-deck, Morgan racing towards space on the wings of a lynx.
When you're on the solid rocket boosters, that's where that 2-ton gorilla comes in. There's a lot of vibration going on. It's really loud. You are so glad to finally get going. And I was so excited because I knew in a couple days we would be at the International Space Station. There's some hooting and hollering going on because everybody's excited about the ride. And I had a huge smile on my face, which I like to see was kind of plastered back there by that acceleration.
We're coming up on the point of negative return where the shuttle will be too far downrange, too high in altitude
Endeavour,
to return to the launch
mode.
Site in the event of an engine failure.
Two engine mode on.
Endeavour, negative return.
And then once we get rid of the solid rocket boosters, the ride is really, really smooth and very, very quiet. You're still accelerating and you're experiencing 3 Gs, 3 times Earth's gravity, so there's that push. After 8.5 minutes, when you reach space, we shut off the main engines, and we get rid of the fuel tank. And at that point, it's really fun because there is no up or down in space. And all of a sudden, what was your ceiling now becomes a wall. And so you unstrap, and you and everything that hasn't been tightly strapped down just floats out. Floating is really fun because it really is like flying in your dreams. For those of you that had flown in your dreams, maybe when you were a kid, it's very much what it feels like. At that point, it's really interesting because you're still going 5 miles a second, but because you're not accelerating anymore, it feels like you're not going anywhere at all. You're in this free fall around the Earth.
That piece was produced by Kristen Marguerite Deutsch, a freelance radio producer and writer, formerly a student of the University of Southern California's Annenberg School. I'm Bob Carlson, and from KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional. And today on the program, Faster and Faster. Well, this next story is my favorite story that I've ever produced in my 6 years of doing this program for reasons that will become obvious. It was recorded almost exactly 2 years ago. That was when my daughter Tess was 10 years old, about to be 11. It was in the waning days of summer, just like now. School was about to start the next week. And she and I got an idea for a story that we made together. And it's a story about fear. And everybody's got them. But in this case, it's the kind of fear that looks like a tangled steel looping roller coaster. And what it takes to get in and hold on when your insides are telling you to do the exact opposite. Just like a roller coaster, this story has some ups and some downs. From KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
My name is Tess Carlson. I'm 11 years old, and up until about a year ago, I had a bad fear of some roller coasters.
I'm freaking out and wanting to get off and run home without the car. There's too many loops.
When somebody first meets a person, that's what they think of, their first impression of the person. And I don't want, as soon as I go in the air, to be like sobbing and sniveling. When I hear that now, I think of myself as a big baby back then. I probably have more anxiety than an average kid. I have Asperger's syndrome, and it means I get anxious easier than most people. Some of the things that make me anxious are the dark, losing things, being late, scary movies, tests. Even if I have studied for tests in school, they always make me nervous. And until recently, also large roller coasters. We're on the way to Magic Mountain. At the end of last summer, my dad and I came up with an idea for me to face my fears and have the confidence to be able to do something that I'm afraid of. That's what this story is about. Well, I'm a little nervous still. I can't be totally assured that everything's going to be fine. This was a while ago, and we were driving home from our trip up the coast, and we passed Magic Mountain, and I made a comment that lots of my friends were going on these big roller coasters, and I wanted to be as brave as them, but I was sort of too scared to do it. So then my dad, the producer of this radio show, suggested that we should go to Magic Mountain sometime. And at first I was horrified by that suggestion, and I thought, is he crazy? No way! Am I going to a theme park that is only roller coasters? Some of the roller coasters at this park are fast and flipping you upside down. I've never rode a roller coaster with a loop before, so today will be my first day of roller coasters with loops. Magic Mountain has some really crazy extreme rides like X2 and Tatsu. But my dad doesn't even want to go on those because he gets dizzy easily and he's afraid he might throw up before I do. So we're definitely not going to ride on those. I'm a little bit surprised that you would be afraid of the roller coasters a little. I just assume once you're a grown-up, you don't really have fears about anything.
Everybody has fears.
Yeah. Everybody has different fears. In fact, once in my class, this might be a tiny bit off topic, but there was a spider and everybody was screaming and afraid of it. But me and Emily and one boy were the only ones not afraid to trap the spider in a cup and take it outside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I love all animals, and bugs and arachnids, like spiders, are all animals too. When I see somebody going on this big roller coaster with giant drops or going on a ride that spins you all around, I wonder how can they do that, but they probably think the same thing about me trapping the spider in a cup.
Last year I learned about something called the KICK plan, K-I-C-K, and it was a plan for calming down in most situations.
The first K was knowing your emotions. Like right now I feel a little bit nervous, but a lot excited. Then icky thoughts. Like I have a bad thought that I might throw up or Papa might throw up. And I'm afraid I might go on a loop and get freaked out. C stands for calm thoughts. For example, I can honestly say I rode a roller coaster with a loop after today. That's the KICK plan.
The last K just stands for keep practicing. So in a sense, I'm still doing that.
Magic Mountain Parkway! I'm gonna try to spot a roller coaster. I've never actually seen that big of roller coasters. Oh! Wait, is that something we're going on?
I don't know. I don't know what that one is.
That better not be something we're going on. I hate drops that are straight down like that. Can we not go on anything that looks like that?
I think they're gonna look like that.
That's a really big hill.
These are real roller coasters.
I see something else there.
I see $20 for parking.
Hello. Oh, how you doing? Get your seat goes on your dashboard, just follow the white line all the way down. All right,
good one. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, we are here.
Then you go up here and then you kind of stop at this hill. Right here.
Place heads against headrests.
A week or so before we left for Magic Mountain, we went on YouTube to look at some videos of the roller coasters we'd be riding so I'd be more prepared.
Did it just go over a lake?
I think so.
Cool!
The plan was that we'd start with the little kids' rides and then work our way up through scarier roller coasters until finally we rode something that had some loops.
Now, somebody online suggested to just go on the scariest one first. And then that way, once you've done it, you can go on anything.
I think that's a really bad plan. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I really don't want to do that.
You're just as in charge of this day as me, okay? So now what are we going to do first?
We're doing a kids' ride, the Roadrunner Express.
Please remember to stay seated with your seatbelts on and keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the train at all times.
Okay, our first roller coaster, Roadrunner Express. What are your thoughts?
I think it was pretty good and a little bit fast, but it was pretty good and it was a kid's roller coaster, so it wasn't that scary. Next, we're doing Gold Rusher. And here we go.
The old classic Gold Rusher. What did you think?
It gave me a taste of like a real roller coaster. Like the first one was a kid's roller coaster, but people older than me can ride this.
And now we're gonna go on Ninja.
We went sideways because I was closing my eyes, and when I opened them, the world was sideways. It was so fun, and we might be coming back to it. Riding thrill rides will clear out your sinuses. I just now realized that neither of my nostrils are stuffed up anymore.
All right, next stop, Revolution, Tessa's first looping roller coaster.
I'm already starting to feel like I can really do this.
I never actually thought of it as a roller coaster with a loop till now when we're actually going to go on it.
Are you a little nervous now?
Yeah, a little.
Relax, relax. Happened, Tess?
I just rode a looping roller coaster for the first time in my life, and it was so exciting and wasn't even that bad. I am a different person than I was a minute ago. I sort of wish I had kept my eyes open.
Now we're going to go on Viper, which has several loops and corkscrews, and it's probably going to be the first time that I'm in danger of throwing up. Now what's happening?
We're going to ride Viper.
You don't want to go on Viper?
No.
But you know what? I think you can handle it, because I think it's actually slower than Revolution.
Really?
Yeah.
But it has seven loops.
But you've been on one loop. You know, if you can go on one loop, you can go on seven.
But seven is so much more. Also, I sort of want to sit down.
I'm going to throw up because there's too many loops.
You know, it's a minute ago, you told me that you never thought of yourself as a looping roller coaster person, but now you are. That's how I know you can do this. Think of all the people that ride on this all the time and they're perfectly fine.
But if I throw up, I get to throw my water bottle at you.
Okay. Let's take some deep breaths. You know what? You're going to feel just the same way that you felt on the last ride, where when we first get on, you're going to feel a little nervous.
No, not a little nervous. Freaking out and wanting to get off and run home without the car.
That'll take you many days.
I know.
Should we do this together? Okay, let's go. Let's do this thing. Viper like?
I feel ashamed for being afraid of it. It had seven loops and at least three weird corkscrew upside down thingies. Plus, it was incredibly fun. It opened up a whole new level for me because these had really steep drops and my first ever loops and corkscrews. Well, I hope someday we can bring the whole family.
Yeah.
And I just want to say to everybody, you shouldn't be afraid to face your fears, because when Natsui comes time, you are probably going to be amazed at what you can do.
Will you always help me produce my radio stories?
Yeah.
That story was produced by Tess Carlson, Bob Carlson, and Tina Carlson. Most of it was recorded 2 years ago. Tess is now entering eighth grade. She's a voracious reader, violinist, and a taekwondo black belt. I'm Bob Carlson, and from KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional. And today on the program, Faster and Faster. And there was just something about Dan Dombrowski's flashy purple bicycle. Even after it became obsolete and out of fashion, it somehow still had the power to turn a casual bike rider into a bicycling champion, and it became a symbol for a community of cyclists who shared thrilling victories and crushing losses. From KCRW and KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
I think the bike was about having fun, and anybody that rode it seemed to have a great time and seemed to transform into a cyclist. Leah made the Olympics. Amy has won national championships, and we all started on that bike. And so it seemed to have more magical ability to make people love the sport, despite how terrible the components are right now. My name is Sabre Davison. I grew up in Jericho, Vermont, just a mile down the road from Amy Dombrowski. Why did this awful bike stick around? You know, we had a lot of options. My name is Leah Davison, and I'm a professional cyclist riding for Specialized Bikes. I mean, it shows you how well-loved that bike is. Everyone wants to keep updating the parts. I think if I ever saw that bike go to the dump, I'd be outraged. How many pro cycling careers did that thing start? There's something to that bike.
At the time, it was this ridiculously high-end bike. In the mid-90s, it was when the anodized purple was like, you have to have anodized purple. I mean, it was just the coolest thing to have on your bike. My name is Daniel Dombrowski, Amy Dombrowski's brother.
I don't know whether he had to get a special frame size made for the kids because they were small at that or not. So my name is Ed Dombrowski, and I am the father of Daniel, my oldest son, and Amy Dombrowski.
There was a local bike shop that opened up just down the street from us. So I started hanging out there. The shop was featuring the Balance brand as their sort of like high-end. I met Leah Davison, who lived just a couple miles down the road. And so we got friendly and started mountain biking together. And that was kind of an introductory for her and her younger sister, Sabra. At the time, you know, their bikes, they weren't competition ready, I'll put it that way. And so I said, oh, well, you should ride the Balance.
So it was kind of like a favor, like, here, try this. Compared to what I was riding at the time, I thought this was the end-all, be-all of bikes. It was shiny and purple. And so I thought this was a great bike. So Leah started on the Balance and said, this bike's amazing. So that was my goal. I was like, I can't wait to get on this bike. And then it was handed down to me until we got our first real race bikes.
It was not a big deal if the bike went over and lived at their house for a while, or they just like went into our garage and grabbed it. I brought the Balance with me to college. That was the point that it took the first major renovation. Basically, I converted it into a single-speed campus cruiser. After I graduated from college, I came out to Boulder to start grad school. Amy expressed some interest in cycling and mountain biking, and she didn't have a real mountain bike at the time. So, you know, I said, why don't we just put some newer, better parts on the Balance and turn it back into a functional mountain bike? She moved down to Boulder and started riding bikes seriously. She was starting to ride the Balance pretty hard at that point. In Breckenridge, every year they do the Firecracker 50, which is a pretty serious 50-mile mountain bike race, 225-mile laps with a ton of climbing. And she raced the Firecracker 50 on the Balance, which was pretty wild. I mean, that's a serious commitment to race a bike like that in a race like that. You know, at that point in her life with cycling, she'd just show up and just kind of kick ass or crash trying.
I'm pretty sure Amy used the Balance in all of its forms, but just the fact that she was able to race the U.S. National Championships on it and do pretty well, she was tough. You know, she's very tough.
One to go for Amy Dombrowski. She is having a fantastic ride today. She will win here today in Belmont. Dombrowski riding very strong.
At some point, you know, after racing on the road, Amy decided that she wanted to race in the dirt more seriously. that's when the balance got the royal treatment, and she converted it back into a single speed townie. It turned into kind of a freak show. It's got a 700C road wheel on the front while remaining a mountain bike wheel in the back. Single speed cow horn style handlebars on it. Also has a rear rack over the rear wheel. It only has one brake. It's super sketchy to ride. It's really kind of scary.
It had huge bar ends on it, and I'm like, I don't think those were on it when I rode the bike, for sure. And later I learned Amy had put those bars on it just so it could carry a pizza box better.
This poor bike must have this weird personality struggle with identifying what it's supposed to be. If she showed up to a mountain bike race, it was legit, and became a very versatile cyclist. She won U23 cyclocross, road, and mountain bike titles in one season. I don't know if anyone else has ever done that or not.
I think for the spectators, it must have been fun racing to watch, because it was just back and forth, back and forth. So I went for it, I took a chance, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And it.
She was very, very competitive, and she loved to train, you know. And some of the coaches said that she went overboard with it. She just trained too much, you know. And so it was in training that brought her to her death.
Tonight, a Colorado pro cyclist being remembered not because of her tragic death, but her passion to succeed.
That's right. Friends and family of 26-year-old Amy Dobromsky are saying their goodbyes after the athlete was killed in an accident while training overseas.
Amy Dobromsky tijdens een veldrit vorig jaar. Ze was pas sinds dinsdag weer in ons land voor het nieuwe veldritseizoen.
That bike is such a piece of work, and Amy was a piece of work. That object has gone through so many transitions, and so did Amy.
It shows how funny Amy was and how much humor she had. So it's almost like, okay, I raced this bike for real. Amy took it out there just to prove a point and just because it was funny.
I think Amy would want to see basically the same thing happen with this bike as she'd like to see with her other bikes, in that bikes are meant to be ridden. Generally speaking, they're not meant to be hung on a wall. They should be ridden, and they should be ridden hard, and they should be crashed.
So what does Amy mean? She touched so many, many people in her cycling community. It became a way of life for her, a way of making a living. She loved what she was doing. She loved to train. She loved bikes. And it's unfortunate that didn't live with her. Yeah, let the purple bike live on.
That story was produced by Lauren Ober, a reporter-producer for WAMU in Washington, D.C. You can find photos and other information about these stories at our website, kcrw.com/unfictional, where you can also find an archive of all the past episodes of this program. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Follow us on Twitter at Unfictional or like us on Facebook. If you do like the program, please leave us a nice review on iTunes. It'll help more people find the show. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.